Hello and welcome again to Mentoring Developers, a podcast for you, all of you new and aspiring software developers. We're now back with episode 68. Listen in. I think you'll like it.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hey, how are you guys doing? How was your 2018? I hope it was really good for you. For me, it was really busy. I had a new child and had to take care of that baby. The family had to grow. And I had a lot of work. Lots of projects, lots of different things. And other things are going on, and I just didn't have time to do justice to this podcast. So as a result of that, there were not a lot of episodes, and it suffered. I said that I'm going to have a sort of a transformation of this podcast, and it is going to happen, but it's just going to happen a little bit later than I originally thought. You know, life happens. Sometimes you have to prioritize certain things over certain other things. I hope you understand. So now here we are in 2018. The world is a slightly different place right now. We have the Me Too movement, right? In this podcast, we talk about all the difficulties that women face in our industry and in general in life. And now we know that this is not in our head. This happens all the time. We have to be very careful how we conduct ourselves. Okay, and we had other issues. Technologies have changed. A lot of things are evolving, and new exciting stuff is coming out. And we have some challenges. We have some challenges in the economy, of challenges in the job situation. And so things are different. What we are going to be doing in 2018, the rest of it, and 2019, hopefully, and beyond, is we are going to focus more on what matters to you, the listener. So I've had people email me. I've had a lot of people contact me about the show, and they want to be part of the show. They want advice. They want coaching. They want me to help them achieve their goals. And I really enjoy, I love teaching, and I love helping people. So I just hadn't had the chance to do it. So I was working so many hours. I was doing so many things. And I just had to cut back. So I've cut back on the number of hours that I spend actually consulting in software projects so that it frees up some time for me to engage with the audience and to perhaps teach people, perhaps mentor people, and also do some coaching, some one-on-one coaching on your issues, your career issues. And that's going to be a service that I'll be announcing very soon. So be on the lookout for that. But other than that, it's going to be great. In this episode, I'll be talking to Richard Cronick. Now, he's a guy who has a different career. He started messing around with websites, and he realized he really wanted to explore this possibility. So he's enrolled in a short program to do it in his local community, but he needs help and he doesn't know where to turn. So one day he found my podcast and he started listening. So he told me that he listens to my podcast every time he works out. That's really good because it's long form content. And we know that it's really good if you want to learn and if you really want to get immersed in software development. And you're new, you have these anxieties, you don't know if you belong. I think this podcast is pretty good for that. So he started listening to that, and then he reached out to me. And I started coaching him, I started talking to him, and we started to record those sessions. And you're going to see that on this podcast, my coaching sessions with him. And I'm sure that you're going to relate to a lot of the issues that he's facing. So I talk about how to get started. We talk about the issues, what's the best approach, and I do a critique on our industry, you know, the usual stuff. But I really want him to succeed, and I want you to succeed. So if you want to be a part of the show, if you have any questions that I can answer for you, then go ahead and send me an email, us@mentoringdevelopers.com. It's very easy. I check those emails frequently, and I try to answer them as soon as I can. And you have a chance to be a guest on the show if you like. If not, we can do a private session, and we'll talk about the details in the coming episodes very soon. Right now, I just want to wish you a very happy the rest of 2018, and hopefully a very bright 2019. I wish you the best, and I want you to be part of this journey that we are taking at Mentoring Developers. And also, I think we are going to launch our YouTube channel very soon, so we'll probably be able to do live Q&A sessions. We'll be able to talk about some things that we just can't do on podcast setting because it's just audio. Sometimes it's better to have to be able to look at somebody, and so that when you're looking at some concepts or you want to learn something that you can't easily find somewhere else, that you could do that. Hopefully we'll be able to work that out. So I'm really excited about it. If you have any comments on this, as I said before, get in touch with me, us@mentoringdevelopers.com. All right, so this episode is going to be epic. This is about how a person who has a family wants to be a software developer. It's exciting. It's creative. And it's rewarding financially, emotionally, and so on. So let's talk to Richard and let's see where he is and how we can help him together, how we can help him achieve his dreams. It's going to be a series. We're going to go through it over several episodes. This is the first. All right, let's check it out, and I'll see you later. Hi, everyone. Welcome again to another episode of Mentoring Developers. Today, I have a very special guest who has a very interesting story about his trip to China, where he found himself without any means to learn a new language that he didn't know how to speak, and he had to learn it on his own. And then he found himself in a situation where he had to overcome something very similar to a lot of us when we are trying to learn a new programming language. But let's hear from him. Richard, how are you?
Good. How are you, Arslan?
I'm great. It's great to have you. So what happened in China?
Well, after I did a master's program in Asian studies. I was just very interested in Asia at the time. And I was fortunate enough to, after graduating, find a position teaching English at a university in China. And that was sort of my means to get over there. I was just really interested, wanted to see things on the ground, and I wanted to learn the language. And when I arrived, at the beginning, I sort of just naively thought I would absorb everything naturally. And of course that didn't happen. And I realized fairly quickly that I would have to buckle down and actually study work hard. And I didn't really, I had a local salary. I didn't have really the means to enroll in any sort of program. So I had to spend a few hours each day with books and audio programs. But then I realized that didn't really work so well, because when I actually went out and tried to use the language, it wasn't applicable what I learned. So I would study a little bit and then go out in the streets and try to, I used to hang out in front of just a small corner store. The woman there was nice enough to let me just sit there and talk to people. I used to purposefully get lost on the buses. I would take a bus to a place where I wasn't familiar. I'd get off, wander around for a while, and then try to find my way home. And it was a great experience because I learned a lot. Maybe one of the most valuable things from that experience was I learned a lot of confidence that if I push myself, I could learn most anything.
Yeah, and did it work though?
Yeah, after maybe a year or so, I started to have basic conversations, and that was really exciting, and that propelled me to want to work harder. And after maybe 2.5-3 years, I felt fairly comfortable with the language. So yeah, it did work. And I think if I never would have sort of jumped out there and actually started talking and, you know, being out in the streets with people, it probably would have taken quite a bit longer.
Yeah, I can imagine. So this is so good to hear, because this is a life lesson, right? When you're trying to learn something that you don't know, anything, it could be plumbing, it could be programming, it could be a language, it could be anything in life that you don't know. And there's nobody that at home, like your dad is not a master electrician that can teach you how to become an electrician. If you want to learn, you have to essentially put yourself in a difficult situation. And the lesson I think that I learned from this is, if I stick with it, if I don't give up, there's nothing that will stop me from learning. Well, some people will have a different capacity. It took you a number of months or a couple of years. Maybe it would have taken me twice as long. But I think I can say that I probably could have done the same thing if I wanted to really do it badly. That's the thing, right? Because if you didn't want it bad enough, you would give up in 6 months. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, yeah. I studied a little bit of language here and there in school, like most Americans, and I had to study some language even in graduate school, but I never really learned it that well. And looking back, I realized I didn't really know why I was learning it. But when I was in China, I knew exactly why I was learning Chinese, because I wanted to use it to communicate in everyday life. So yeah, if you don't know the why, it's really hard to stick with something.
Yeah, motivation is really so important. Okay, so let's learn a little bit more about you. So why did you go to China? How did you get into programming? Tell us a little bit about your origin story.
Okay, well, I went to China, in retrospect, I think just because I was looking for something different and something exciting and something challenging. I remember sort of feeling like school just felt a little dull. And when I got to China, everything was so different. And I was only planning on staying a year, but it was just very stimulating and exciting, very challenging. And I ended up staying for 8 years because of I enjoyed it so much.
Wow, 8 years. I didn't expect that. I didn't know that. That's amazing. So that's a very large part of your life. And then, you stopped doing, I mean, I don't know, were you working there in the language, were you teaching Chinese? Is that what you're doing, or English?
Yeah, the entire time I was in China, I was teaching English, which I actually grew to love very much. it was a great career. But somewhere along the way, about 3 years ago, I stumbled upon a course online about how to build websites with WordPress. And I had no experience with anything like that. But for whatever reason, I jumped in. It looked interesting. And I really got hooked. And so much so that I ended up building a business out of it. And I've been running that business for about 3 years now. And essentially what we do is we build passive income websites with WordPress. And it's great. And I've enjoyed it a lot. But I've always sort of been curious about what's going on behind the scenes. And this started when I, in WordPress, there's a visual side to editing a post or a page and the tech side. And I started peeking at the tech side, and I was a little confused, of course, but I was looking at what I now realize is HTML. But, you know, I wanted to know more. So I sort of, you know, began Googling what was behind the scenes there. And then eventually that led into a little bit of CSS and just curiosity, trying to learn more and trying to become better with our websites. And then as more problems with the sites came, I realized I needed to learn more just to be in better control of them. So that led a little bit into JavaScript, but I mostly just sort of dabbled in all of these things until this past summer in 2018, I took a Harvard online CS50 course, and it was about programming, intro to programming, computer science. And it was one of the most exciting things that I had encountered in a long time. And by the end of it, I'd say I was pretty much hooked on programming. And since that time, my wife has taken over our business, and I've been spending all my time learning programming. And I was fortunate enough a few months ago in September to get offered a scholarship for, there's a local nonprofit organization called AIM Institute. I'm in Omaha, Nebraska, and they have a school called Interface. And I was able to get enrolled into a .NET course, which I'm in the middle of right now.
So is that like a boot camp?
It's not a boot camp, no. So it's about 8 hours a week in the evenings.
So what is it then?
Well, so it's I guess the purpose of it is to provide a foundation or sort of a beginner's course in .NET. The purpose of this foundation is to develop tech talent in the local area.
Right.
So they're just kind of, I guess, starting to, they're trying to give people a start in certain technologies.
And then at the end of it, do they try to place you, have recruiters come in?
Okay. Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a boot camp. You know, maybe a longer boot camp, but a boot camp, because a boot camp is like 3-4 months. Usually that's how it is. 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, maybe, where you go in there and you just do projects, project, project, project. And then you learn all the different skills that they think you need to get an entry level job. And hopefully you get it. That's the point. And so I've interviewed a lot of people that have gone to boot camps. I've interviewed people who run boot camps, and it's an interesting phenomenon. It's a contested subject. Some people love it, some people hate it. But I think it's a worthwhile endeavor. I think if you can, not everybody can afford it, not everybody has the time, but you have, it's just awesome that you're doing that. So when you were joining this, did you think about the technology choices? Did you say, should I be doing .NET, or is it like, well, I don't really know. This is the only game in town. Let's just do it.
Well, so originally, the only availability was for COBOL, which I'd never heard of before, but I now know is an important language, but it's quite old.
COBOL. They're teaching COBOL? Okay.
So there's awesome. Apparently some need still for COBOL here. And yeah. I read a few articles about how a lot of COBOL programmers are retiring, but how a large percentage of financial transactions still use COBOL. So it was a scholarship, and I was just interested because I figured any class, any learning with programming, I want to join. And then they opened it up and offered a foundations course as well, HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, and then .NET. And for me, of the three, there was really no choice. I wanted the .NET because it felt like I could make the most impact using that.
Right. Okay. So for the audience, they don't know the background for this podcast episode, this particular interview. I'm talking to you, Richard, because you reached out to me and you listened to the podcast, and then you really needed somebody to help you, to counsel you, to guide you a little bit. And so I asked you if you'd like to come on the podcast and do it live so other people can benefit from it. And you graciously agreed to that. So this is great. Anybody who's listening to this podcast right now, pay close attention to what Richard's going to say, because we're going to talk about the problems that he's facing in achieving this goal. And a lot of my listeners are in the same boat as you, Richard. So what is it that you're trying to achieve? If you could just make a list of goals, what's your biggest goal right now in the next year, next 2 years?
Well, so I have a list of goals. I assume you mean professionally.
Professionally, and we can also talk about personal goals. Personal goals are important. They're really, you can't really separate the professional from the personal. But let's talk about professional goals for now.
Well, so professionally, what I'd like to do is be able to work in a team as a developer, doing something where it's contributing in some way, of service in some way. And at the same time, I'd like to hopefully have that situation be where I can also be constantly learning. I guess if there's one characteristic or trait about me that's most pronounced, it's that I'm sort of obsessed with just learning. That's my favorite thing to do. I just like learning and then trying to produce or create or use what I learned to solve some sort of problem. So my hope is to get a position somewhere where I can solve problems or create things to help solve problems, to be of service.
Would you like to make money doing that, or can you just volunteer?
Well, I would like to make money doing that.
Okay, that's good. So you don't want just work, you want a job that pays money, because lots of people volunteer. I've talked to startups and companies and nonprofits that would have loved to hire me, but not pay me. And so as much as I'd like to help, there are some causes that I'd like to support. There are some startups, I think they're working on a cool idea. I'd like to help, but I want money, right? But I need it, and I want it. And there's no shame in that. So I think that it's very important. The reason I pointed out is that it's very important for you to make a note for it. Even if you don't say it out loud, just you should know that you want to do good work, but you also want to get paid well for this. And you should know what that means. So it's very common in our industry, especially at the junior level, mid-level, that companies take advantage of developers. It happens a lot. They don't want to pay you what you're worth because you don't know what you're worth. And you come off saying, I'm not in it for the money. And that happens. Well, they'll be like, well, how much money does he really need? And so this is a question that gets asked sometimes. How much money do you need to live? You know, if I needed just enough money to live, I didn't need to spend all these years learning programming necessarily, right? This is a highly valued skill. So you should value yourself as a developer. So once, if they hire you, they should pay you well. And if they don't pay you well, then maybe you have to think about whether this a job is worth taking. So something to consider. Okay. And so okay. Anything else?
Anything else about me?
Any other goals? How about your personal goal? Yeah. Maybe your number one personal goal.
Number one personal goal. It's getting into the winter here in Omaha, and I like to go for a walk every morning, and I've been getting a little lazy on that and not going out because it's 20 degrees. So a goal is that I don't want to miss a single day of going outside and walking, no matter what the weather is. Let's see, I have a few here with me. I would like to spend a little bit more time each day just sort of practicing gratitude, writing down things that I'm grateful for, just because I've started to realize over the years how important being appreciative and grateful really is, how powerful it is.
No, this is really surprising, and this is really good. I've heard some people talk about this. Gratitude is a surprising thing because we don't really want to feel grateful. Instinctively, we want to not be grateful, because if you're grateful, then you don't want anything else. And so, our instinctive, especially people who live in big cities and in a really competitive environment, what we want to do is we want more. Because if you stop wanting more, you stop getting more, and then you fall behind. There's the fear of falling behind. You know, if I make this much money and I can buy those five things, but maybe I should buy 10 things, because if the idea is that if you don't grow, you'll stagnate and you'll die. So there's on the flip side of it, if you're grateful for what you have, then you'll have contentment. For personal things, this is really powerful. Okay, wonderful. Okay, so you want to get a job as a developer. And how long do you have left in this program, this program that you're doing?
About 1 month. It ends in the middle of December.
Okay. And how long has it been so far?
It's been 2 months so far. Okay. So three months in total.
All right. And how do you feel about this goal? Do you think you're getting closer to that, or is it still elusive?
Well, I definitely feel like I'm getting closer, but perhaps my biggest challenge is, I can't tell how sort of far I have yet to go. And I know that really there is no end. And that's one of the things that is really attractive to me about learning coding, programming, is that there certainly is no end to the challenge. One of the reasons I really enjoyed Chinese was the challenge, but after so many years, the challenge was gone. But right now, there's, as you know, there's just so many different technologies and so many different ideas to wrap your brain around. And it's just hard to know how far I am along and how far, at what point I'll feel a little more comfortable, perhaps. I don't worry too much, because I can see that if I just keep working, it gets clear what I need to know and where I'm going. But a big challenge is figuring out what I need to be spending my time on, what's most important, where I'll get sort of the greatest return in improving my ability, so then I can use it for something of use, something that's useful.
Yeah, that's a valid concern. The one thing I can tell you is that that feeling never goes away. As long as you're learning, you always feel like you never know if you're ready. So there's something called imposter syndrome. That's a very common thing. It happens to pretty much everybody. I've interviewed tons of people, and we talk about imposter syndrome all the time. This happens. But there is an actual thing where you need a basic set of skills that will help you become successful. I can actually tell you this. If you had never been to a code camp, if you have never learned any programming, you don't know anything about computers, and if I hired you today to become a junior programmer in a team with senior programmers, let's say there are five people who are senior, and I hired you, you don't know anything about programming. You had no interest before joining. In 6 months, you'll be a programmer.
I do believe that. Right. Yeah, I do think on-the-job training is some of the most valuable.
Right.
And on-the-job modeling.
And the reason for that is not necessarily because it's so easy that you just do it and you learn it. The reason is that when they hire you, and they know you're not a programmer, and they have senior people around you, they expect you to learn from them. So those people are going to hold your hand a little bit. They are going to try to teach you. They'll give you easier things. And if you make a mistake, they're not going to make a big deal, because they realize that you're learning. And that's a problem with our industry. When you join a company, if you claim that you know programming, even if you've done a 3-month course, and even if you've just spent a few months dabbling, they will then expect you to produce results right away. That's a problem. So the best way to get your foot in the door, and for somebody like you who's still not sure how to do certain things, is to enter the job market as an intern or as a trainee of some kind. Those are very hard to find. Most companies don't do that. But if you do find a big company that understands that you don't know and they don't pay you much, let's say they just pay you minimum wage, that's completely okay. That's perfect if they actually put you in projects, they let you work with other people. 6 months is all you need. So that's the one approach that I prefer over all the other approaches that we're going to talk about.
Okay.
If you can find a kind of a trainee position, like, let me shadow you and just, you know, I'll learn from you. Just pay me $10 an hour. Don't worry about it. I'll work 40 hours a week. I'll work as many hours as you can give me, and I'll go out at night and I'll learn. In the daytime, I'll just shadow people. Okay, that would be perfect. And I think in Omaha, you might actually find a job like that. In a bigger city, that's difficult because in Omaha, you have a problem. There are two kinds of problems. One is that you don't have a lot of jobs because it's a smaller city and so on. But you also don't have a lot of people. You know, people from California and New York and other places, they're not thinking of Omaha, right? And that's the benefit you have. You have this unique advantage. You're in a smaller city, which is far away from other big cities. You're sort of isolated. If there is a business in Omaha and they need software developers, they don't have a lot of choice. That's why this kind of code camp that you're going into, this could be a very good deal for you, because going through a code camp, having gone through it, they can say, okay, you know a little bit. And if companies have a relationship with people who are instructors or running your program, then what's going to happen is they're going to say, well, you know, yes, he just doesn't know much, but we know at least he's touched on these things, so we don't have to worry about that. So it's a little, you have a tiny bit of advantage over those people. Okay, so when we talk about .NET or any programming platform, .NET is for people who don't know, let's introduce .NET a little bit. So .NET is many things, and it can mean different things to different people. Essentially, a set of technologies and tools and infrastructure and a whole bunch of stuff, you can just create a little ball, call it .NET. And things that work well together, and you can use .NET to create a website. You can also use it to make an app or a program that runs on Windows. You can even make something that runs natively in Windows or Macintosh. And now you can use .NET to make an app that runs on Android natively, on iOS natively, right? Pretty much anything, lots of different things. You can even use .NET to build your little IoT devices, little miniature devices, and program Raspberry Pi and so on. So .NET is literally now in 2018 encompasses so many different things. You know, 10 years ago, .NET was more limited. Now .NET means many different things to different people. So we're going to distill this down to what you really need to learn. But if you didn't want to do .NET, let's say that your program didn't do .NET, so they could have done another programming platform, this big ball of technologies. It could have stayed in sort of the Java or Java virtual machine land. That's another option. Those two are sort of competitors, or they are replaceable, almost interchangeable, .NET and not really, but kind of, in the enterprise. So if you want to work at a Fortune 500 company, or if you want to work at a large company or more established company, or you want to work at a company that is not a technology company, you wouldn't say, for instance, a bank is a technology company, or there's a retail store, a chain of retail stores, that's not necessarily a technology company. They need computers, they need websites, they need internal systems, but that's not their main business. For those companies, .NET is very popular. And we'll talk about that, why that is. But if you didn't have these two Java, the Java ecosystem and the .NET ecosystem, then you could have a whole bunch of other ecosystems. You know, you could be doing open source Ruby and Python and so on. Or you could be doing some Perl, something completely different. So there are many different programming languages and then many different frameworks and technologies. There's this little ball of things that work well together. And there's this little isolated ball, you know, this little thing over here, this little thing over here. So there we have all these little pockets. And as a technology company, often they have to pick. For enterprise customers, which means large companies, companies that, like I said, they're not really technology focused there. They just have to use technology. A lot of times there's choices between Java, the Java ecosystem and the .NET ecosystem. What I've seen in the last few years is people are moving towards .NET a lot more from Java. Java used to have a monopoly in the enterprise. And there are reasons for that. So the difference between them is that .NET has a very good and evolving ecosystem. So it started small, started as the underdog to Java's behemoth, right? But then it grew in the tooling. So the editors that you use and so on, the platforms that you goes on, the programming language, C#, has evolved, I would say, faster and better than Java. On the Java platform, you don't have to use the Java programming language anymore. You can use other programming languages that work with the virtual machine. Okay, so that's the background. Now within .NET is an excellent choice. If you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I don't know which technology stack to use, then I'm going to say .NET is a very good choice for beginners. And the reason is that a lot of times getting started is the hardest part of starting with a new programming paradigm, new programming language. And so getting started is hard. Getting your first Hello World, getting your first to-do app, getting your first full stack app that you can do something happens, get stored, and you can retrieve it, what we call CRUD, which is just like a standard application that can save things and show things, and then you can build on that. That stuff is super easy in .NET. Okay. So now, Richard, out of all the things .NET can do, have you thought about what you want to focus on, or do you want to learn everything? There's only one good answer to that question.
Well, of course, I can't learn everything. And there's always sort of the struggle between breadth, like how knowing how much you need to know about all the different things and going really deep in one or two areas. And certainly, I think, you know, you want to become ideally very good in one or two areas. And I'm not sure which of the technologies will be sort of where I'll be most effective. And that's what I'm exploring now. I've been looking at ASP.NET MVC, learning about entity framework, fiddling around a little bit with WPF Windows apps, desktop apps. I tend to gravitate more towards right now, more towards the MVC and web development. And that could be just because that's what I've been doing and that's where I feel more comfortable. But I've been trying to become more familiar with databases and SQL and entity framework. And that's been quite a bit more challenging. But even after a couple months of basically spending all my time learning about this ball that is .NET is still a little fuzzy even now of all the things that can be done with it, because it just seems massive, the possibilities. So I'm still working my way through trying to get at least an understanding of all the possibilities with .NET.
Okay. So one thing I would say is, if there are two ways of approaching this. You can say, let's see what I want to learn in .NET. You can say, well, there's MVC. I like learning that. And there's Entity Framework, and there's SQL Server Database, and I like this, and I can learn that. That's one way of doing it. The problem with this is it creates confusion because you don't know why you're doing it. So if you start with a goal, and this is what we talked about before this interview, when I emailed you, is if you start with a goal and you know exactly where you want to be, your destination, then you know what you need to do to get there because it's easy to walk backwards. It's very hard to go forwards because you can't predict. You don't know. You don't know if you learn ASP.NET MVC, then you don't know where it will take you because you really literally haven't thought about it. So let's go back. Let's go into, forget about the technologies. The good thing about .NET is you can pretty much do anything you want. So start with what you want, the end result. You're talking about you want a job. So imagine yourself having that job that you want. You have that job and you're going there, you're happy. Monday morning, you're happy. You're the only happy person in Omaha. It's going to work. Monday. Awesome. So what is that job? What do you see? What are you doing? What are you working on?
Perhaps maybe my biggest challenge is making that picture clear because I know you got to know what you're going towards. But as someone who's only been actually programming for a few months, I don't have a clear picture yet of all of the roles out there.
Let me tell you, let me help you with that. So okay. One thing you could do is you could be building web pages and websites, essentially a lot more complicated than a WordPress site, but essentially a website, which is people are going to go to the browser, they're going to type in the URL, and then a page will show up, they'll do something, and then a new page will show up or some interaction will happen. Imagine something like the Gmail. The Gmail is a website and it does things, right? It is very complicated, but you can imagine a less complicated version of Gmail. It could be anything. It could be any website that you have visited, and there are lots of websites that are made in .NET. And you go in there, you do something, something happens. You either save some records or something more interesting happens. So that's one thing, making web pages and websites. Another thing you could be doing would be you could be making native applications. For instance, in a control room, if you're in a factory environment where they are looking at different processes, there are different machines running, they have different. So in a factory floor, you're going to have lanes, and then there's a part is being manufactured or something is being manufactured. It goes from one station to the next, to the next, to the next. It's like a conveyor belt. And then you want to see as a administrator, somebody who's in charge of monitoring what's happening, you want to see what's going on, right? You're not going on the web. You don't really need to go to a website. You don't need to because you're doing one thing. This computer is dedicated to do one thing. And that application can be a native application, which means it gets installed and gets run and it works even if you don't have internet. That's one type of activities. You could do it for Windows or you could also do it for a Mac. And imagine that you have another type of developer whose job it is to make Android apps, make business Android apps. Essentially, same thing, same idea. That you go to an app and then you enter some values and then you see something, you see reports, you see dashboards, and you click a thing and something happens. You could do it for Android. You could do it for an iPhone. You could do it for an iPad. Those are different people. They're different roles. You could also do something completely different. For instance, you could be the guy who is responsible for and building the API, application programming interface, which means there is no page. There is no user that goes in and types things and something happens. It's just functionality that's available to other websites or other human beings. Usually, usually other websites or other services than, for instance, Gmail, actually Google Maps has an API to get the longitude and latitude of addresses, right? So if you have an address and you want to see what's the longitude latitude value for that, they'll let you do that. You just send them this value and they'll return something to you. This happens essentially, it's a machine-to-machine communication. Right? You can read it, but it's not really meant for you to read. It's meant for you to process. So that's just back-end API work, right? A web service, as they say. A web service, unfortunately, is a term that's abused in the general media. If you don't know anything about programming, if you don't know about tech and you haven't done any programming, you might think Gmail is a web service or a service that's provided on the web. It's not what that is. So if you're listening right now and you're confused what a web service is, send me an email. My email address is us@mentoringdevelopers.com and I'll try to answer it. So but that's something that you could do. You could be an API builder. Or you could say, I really enjoy looking at data and working with data. I really enjoy being a SQL ninja, right? I can write these giant stored procedures that I don't know any loops or anything. I don't know how to do programming in C#, but I'm really good at doing some really crazy SQL stuff, which means if somebody needs to crunch data, if somebody needs to solve problems with their data store or database, then I'd be their guy. That could be that person is completely different, and usually it's a dedicated job. It's called a DBA. It's not doing. I was thinking DBA. You know what is that? If I just heard that, it could be doing business as. And no, it's database administrator. Unfortunately, so. You could be doing that. It could be something completely different. No programming. There are some people who actually are very good at visualizing a solution to a problem, or they're very good at actually writing down and eliciting first, going to the customer, going to the client, the user who needs a thing done, and then explaining it to other people and understanding the full picture. And they're tech savvy, but they're not necessarily people who do any technical work. Those are called business analysts. They exist in large corporations, though. You won't find them in small companies, but they exist, and that's a very legitimate career. And those could be former programmers, somebody who did programming that they just moved on, or it could be somebody completely different. And I've seen this happen, and this is a career that is that pays pretty well. However, there are not so many jobs for this type of profession. But that's a valid thing. And if you can work at a Fortune 500, you could probably get a job like that. Another thing could be a tester or a QA analyst. Somebody who's going to make sure that something that you're building, that developers are working on, does not get passed on to the user before it is good. So their job is not to ensure quality. Actually, let me take a step back. Their job is not to ensure quality. I confuse myself sometimes. But their job is to validate quality. And that's something that I have spoken about in the past, and it gets developers by surprise. They're like, what do you mean? They're QA. Their job is to make sure there's quality. No. As a developer, your job is to make sure you put out quality work. All they're trying to do is to see if you messed up, right? They're ensuring, they're validating it. You're ensuring it. Because what happens is a lot of times developers just say, we're just going to just put something out as soon as quickly as possible and let them figure out if it's good or not. Well, that's wrong in my opinion. But of course, people, you know, there are different opinions. I've been in environments where speed of delivery is preferred over accuracy. And if you're in that environment, then obviously you don't have the time to ensure anything. You just, you know, your hope is your best policy at that time. So, okay. So now you know. This is essentially all the jobs that I can think of, the different things you could be doing, and those are all legitimate, all will pay you decently. Which one of these things attracts you the most?
Well, so first, that's very, very helpful. That's incredibly helpful just to sort of have that all laid out there. So I can honestly say that most of those, I would be, at least at the outset, excited, genuinely excited to pursue. But there's a few that stand out that I think would be a little more exciting, or I feel I gravitate a little more towards the web development, app development, and the actual programming itself. SQL hasn't really attracted my love yet. I don't know that I would want to spend all my, but I may be missing something, and I certainly haven't spent a ton of time with SQL. But there's a couple of things that I find that I really enjoy, and it's the type of thing that I just can't stop doing until it's done or solved. And one of that is the front end, the look and the feel of the website, mostly CSS. For a couple of years now, I've really enjoyed that. But what I've discovered recently that I also really enjoy is actual programming. So most of what I'm programming in is C#. But it is just such a feeling of elation solving a problem or getting something to work. When something goes wrong, I enjoy sort of rolling up my sleeves and saying, okay, you know, here's something to solve. And solving it, it's a great moment when it happens. And then it's nice to move on to the next thing. It's sort of, for me, feels like just a continuous, enjoyable thing to do. So, I mean, I'm really excited at the prospect of not just spending all my time doing it, but actually having, getting paid to spend all my time doing that. So that is really helpful to sort of hear that all laid out. I do appreciate that.
So I think what I'm seeing is that you like to touch things, something happens, and then you see it, right? The visual feedback. And I love it too. And I think what you want to do, it seems, is you want to work on the web, which is very legitimate. You want to make websites that you can tinker with, because websites are really fun to tinker with. Not everything is that easy and straightforward, right? People who work on APIs, they are in algorithms and other things, and it's also satisfying to a degree because you control so many different things, but it's not visual. It's really, you can't show it to people. It's like an art project. You can never, you will probably never have an art project in API, but you could do it in a website. You could say, hey, look, you could show it to your wife. You could show it to your kids. You can show it to other people. Hey, look what I did. And they will be able to see it. There's some value in that. So I think that you should stick with web development and say, I'm going to get a job as a .NET web developer. Okay, I'm going to be a .NET web developer in, let's say, 6 months, a year. Just set a date. I am. In order for you to become a .NET developer, all you have to do is declare it. Once the day you say, I am, you are.
I believe that.
Okay. You don't need a job to become a developer. That's a mindset thing, right? You have to believe in yourself, right? And so believe in yourself, but also back it with some things that you have done. And you'll be working on projects in this program, in the code camp that you're doing. But what I want to do is to give you a program that you can follow that not only will give you some important skills, but also give you the confidence to know that, yes, I am a developer, and I may not know everything, but I am a developer, and if somebody hires me, I'll show them that I can learn and I will produce results. I will do what it takes. So that confidence, you get the confidence by just practicing a little bit. So we're going to talk about this. I think that if you have a piece of paper, just write down goal. Now the goal is I'm a web developer in .NET. That's it. Okay. Once you have that and set a timeline for this, I'm going to say, just say, let's say May of 2019. May 2019, you are a web developer in .NET. Okay. All right. So now you have your end goal. This was a place you want to be. And this is where you are. So now we're going to have to put these mile markers there, right? And it's very easy to walk backwards. So you have to go back and say, in order for me to be a web developer on May 1st, what do I need to be on April 1st? Then what do I need to be in March 1st? Then February, and then keep going backwards until to present day, which is November. So that's how you do it. But then the question is, what are those things? Okay. So we're going to talk about what should be the mile markers. Then we're going to talk about what are the different things you should know. Basic abstract concepts. These are things you need to know. And in order to know those things, I want you to start with a concept. Don't start with a technology. Don't say, I want to learn Entity Framework. Don't say, I want to learn SQL. Right? Don't say that. Because what that does is boxes you in. And it doesn't let you see the big picture. You always come with the big picture. And then, for instance, you can say, I want to learn how to persist data. How do you persist this data? Somebody's entering information in a form. I want to save it so that the next time they open this form, they get this back. You want a way to persist data. Okay. So how do we persist data? What are the options? What are the pros and cons? And then you're going to narrow it and narrow it until you arrive on the persistence system. There's so much to learn there, and we should go into that. And then the idea of, okay, there are different ways of making websites in .NET. So let's talk about the best one. Let's talk about the pros and cons. Okay, so let's do all of that. Unfortunately, I'm out of time, but let's have you back for a follow-up, and then we'll go through this process. We'll make the mile markers. They'll work on the different technology choices. I'm sorry, take a step back. We're going to talk about concepts that you should know, and then within those concepts, to achieve that thing, the abstract thing, what are the technology choices? And then pros and cons, and we'll discuss. We'll go back and forth. You can ask questions and so on. How does that sound?
Sounds great. Absolutely. I appreciate it.
Of course.
It's nice to have some help planning out a route from someone who's already been there.
Absolutely. This is what this podcast is about, is helping people just like you. And so I'm so happy that I was able to help you. And I think this interview is going to help a lot of other people. So if you're watching this podcast or listening to it, really, it's an honor, it's a privilege that I'm able to serve the community. And I get a lot of emails and a lot of people that they tell me that it's helping them. It's something that it inspires them. And that's the whole point. Anybody who really wants it and they have some aptitude, they can be software developers. But it's not for everybody. If you're not into it, that's okay. But if you want to, I want to help you achieve your goals, because I think the world needs more people from different diverse backgrounds to come into this field to help us a little bit. So what we have is kind of more of the same, right? One kind of people, one type of person, one background. You bring, for instance, your Chinese background, your teaching background in English, And when you solve a problem, that all of that knowledge and all of those things will go into that solution. So we're going to build better software in the world, right? We have talked about this in the past in this interview, in this podcast, and this is what happens to us all the time. So I'm very happy that new people are coming in to our industry, and if I can help them, be great. All right, so we'll see you. Let's schedule something, and then we'll see everyone soon. Okay.
And also, just a note: our industry needs more people like you, Arslan. Well, listening to your podcast every morning has been one of the best parts of my education.
Well, that's really good to hear. That's wonderful. Well, that makes it all worth it. Okay.
As it should.
All right. I'll see you guys later.
Thank you, Ars.
Hi, folks. It's really good to know that you made it to the end of this episode. Did you enjoy listening to it? Did you have any questions that you wanted to ask or maybe some suggestions? Fire me an email at us@mentoringdevelopers.com and I'll see to it that it gets responded. Also, go ahead and sign up for the email list if you have not done that already. Go to mentoringdevelopers.com and you'll be able to sign up for email list. And once you do, I'll send you my 5 steps to success as a software developer, and also send you information about salary negotiations and how to get better salaries. And you can ask me any questions you want over there, and I'll be able to answer it through email personally. Once again, thanks for listening and stay in touch.
For show notes and transcripts, visit us at mentoringdevelopers.com.